Yeah, and I agree with John as well. Plus also too, the Chinese government also pretty much has an agreement with any company that sets up there that they're automatically a 50% owner. So unless Stellantis wants to give away 50% of its ownership to foreign country, it wouldn't really benefit them at all. Now, if they put a finger hold in there and just go ahead and set up another own EV market just to take advantage of maybe the pass through of the cheaper lithium, the cheaper batteries, and just, disperse them to an American market, then I could see that.
This roundtable episode is sponsored by you, the listener. Thank you for listening to our show. You can sponsor the roundtable episode easily and cheaply. Just go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact and reach out. Now, I know if you're an individual, why would you want to advertise? But, I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to take your money. You can be a sponsor as soon as our next episode come up very soon near you. Hey, I'm Tony. I want to welcome all our new listeners and our regulars to the Jeep Talk Show Roundtable. I'm your host, and I'm excited to have you here at this special gathering of passionate Jeep enthusiasts. On tonight's episode, we will be asking you, would you buy a Jeep if it was built in China? China. I can't say it the way Trump says it, China. So there are signs that Jeep is moving from off-road to luxury vehicles. Is Jeep forgetting who they are or just trying to survive? Hey, do you know you can submit your, if you think those questions suck, you can submit your own questions to our roundtable. Just go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact to find out how.
Are you ready?
It's time for the Jeep Talk Show with hosts Tony, Josh, Wendy, and Chuck.
All right, so Sandy Moreau recently said that he thinks that Stellantis, Jeep, and Ram specifically are going to be moving to China. Who is this Sandy Moreau person, and who the hell does he think he is? Sandy Moreau is an automotive engineer who specialized in machining, machine tools and manufacturing. He started as a toolmaker at the Valiant Machine and Tool Company, a General Motors supplier in Windsor. In 1978, he joined the Ford Motor Company, where he improved methods of engine assembly. In 1988, he started his own consultancy, Moreau and Associates, in Troy, Michigan, specializing in lean design, tearing down automotive products to study and suggest improvements and innovations. Now located in Auburn Hills, Michigan, the company performs electric vehicle benchmarking and consults in aerospace, defense, and medical sectors. In 2018, he started broadcasting video analysis and interviews on his YouTube channel, Moreau Live. The channel has over 409,000 subscribers. You got to figure that's been updated since that figure, and raised the profile of his consultancy during the pandemic when meetings and trade shows were restricted. All right, so whether you are a diehard Jeep enthusiast or just starting to explore the world of off-roading, we're thrilled to have you here as part of this discussion. Please consider joining the discussion and being part of our weekly Zoom meeting, jeeptalkshow.com/contact to find out how to join. To our roundtable meeting attendees, the people on the Zoom meeting, please introduce yourself with your name and location the first time you speak tonight. This helps the listener know your voice and when you speak during the show. All right. Hello, Zoom people. Were you quiet while I was talking, or were you guys talking over me?
We're quiet. Right.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hola.
All right. So let's get started with what, first off, does anybody here know who Sandy Moreau is? All right. I found him because I was, I found out some stuff about Tesla. I mean, he's been looking at Teslas and but breaking them down and talking to people about them. That's how I found him. I'm a Tesla stock owner, and I have an interest in Tesla from that standpoint. Not so much driving them or buying one, but it's very interesting technology, and it is. I think it is the premier EV that's available out there. But keep in mind, I am a stockholder. So this is what Sandy said in a recent YouTube video.
Coming in second is Stellantis. Now, we don't see much going on here in North America, but then I've kind of predicted that Stellantis is probably going to abandon ship on North America. Their headquarters is for sale right now. They want to get out of that. I don't see, I haven't heard anything about a new 300 or what are they going to do with the Ram and the Charger, or sorry, not the Ram, but the Challenger and the Charger. I haven't seen a Ram truck that's going to compete with a Lightning, or and I can't even hardly imagine it competing with the Cybertruck. So what's happening? So we were talking about predictions. I believe that Stellantis is probably going to move Jeep and Ram somewhere else, probably China. And I believe that they'll just kind of like diminish their involvement here in North America.
So that's pretty scary stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I read to you who Sandy Monroe is, because anybody can make any kind of statement they want to. And of course, anybody can have a YouTube channel and anybody can have a business. So I don't know that any of this is true, but it's what Sandy believes because he said it. I think it's worth discussing. So we have a link to Sandy's video in the show notes for episode 970. Just go to JeepTalkShow.com. All right, if Sandy is right and moves Jeep moves to China, would you still buy a China Jeep?
So this is John, Central Texas. The first thing that jumps out at me is Jeep was already in China, and even the Jeep Talk Show had an episode last year where they sold all of their infrastructure and got out of it with a huge ordeal with the Chinese government and everything else. So I'm not really sure how you go through all of that pain and all of that anguish to sever all business ties in the country and then think that they're going to just move it all right back in. I from all the stuff that I've been reading, it looks more likely that they're investing in the EV market in China, because that's really kind of taken off in the Chinese area, because they bought a Chinese company called Loopold or Loop something Leaping.
Yeah, I read about that, and that is certainly true. They are getting into the EV market in China, but this is specifically talking. Sandy's specifically talking about them moving the headquarters. At least that's what I was reading into it, and where Jeep is built to China.
I think that the problem you're going to run into with a lot of that though is, you've got some really strong unions that have very high lobby dollars into a lot of politicians.
I was just going to say, the UAW is not in China yet.
No, but they definitely can line the pockets of the lawmakers who decide tariffs that get slapped on the vehicles coming in and out. I mean, moving something like Jeep. Now, we do have trade agreements in Canada and Mexico. Hell, I think a ton of Jeep products besides the Wrangler are probably made down there. At least I know, I think from the Ram is. So I could see them moving some heavy manufacturing to Mexico, but I don't know. It seems extremely far-fetched and kind of just crazy to say that they're going to pick up and move all the Jeep manufacturing into China. I think that sounds almost like clickbait commentary.
So for the question, if the Jeep was fully made in China, would you still buy a Jeep?
I already bought mine, so I'm good.
No.
So this is Larry from St. Louis. But it wouldn't surprise if Stellantis moved to Europe overseas, because if you look at most of their lineup, very little of that's here anyway. So from a headquarters standpoint, that wouldn't be shocking at all. And I think that, you know, John's point that they've already been there and pulled out of China. So the odds of building the Jeeps that we know, I doubt they'll go there. Maybe the EV or something like that. But yeah, I doubt you'd get much sales in the States if you're trying to sell a Wrangler as we know it here, made in China.
Well, I think we all know that China continued making the Jeep Cherokee after it was mothballed here in the States. And they made a few changes to it that I don't know that I would have, that's the direction I would have gone. But it's not like they can't make a Jeep. It seems un-American to me to have a Jeep built someplace else and by non-American workers. And when I say non-American, there's all kinds of people that are building the Jeep. They're not necessarily Americans, but I think the majority of them are. So I don't know. That's kind of what I'm asking here. Does it make a difference on the surface? I'm thinking, no, I don't want to buy a Chinese Jeep. That's just not, it just doesn't feel right.
Rick from Arkansas Aquaman. I think it would, even owning a Jeep, and even though I own one of the luxury models.
I agree with you.
I mean,
You mean the maritime model?
Yeah. Would it? I mean, would it taint my idea of what Jeep is? Maybe on some level it would, but as far as you know, I'm like John. I've already got my Jeep, and I'm gonna, you know, keep my Jeep and work my Jeep and ride my Jeep and drive my Jeep. But as far as buying a Jeep that was made in China, you know, I don't know. Probably not. You know, I would be surely. I don't know, but. I mean, we live in upside down bizarro world lately anyway, so nothing too far-fetched going to surprise me anyway.
This is Roger from Wisconsin. I think November is going to play into that. If there's even a chance, I think November will play into whether or not that could, something like that would happen.
Yeah, I think you're referring to President Trump.
I didn't want to get too political on it. That's why I just thought I would say November.
Yeah, I think what you're referring to is when President Trump basically told Ford, it's a really nice company you have there. It'd be a shame to put 35% tariffs if you build them out of the United States. So, I think that probably is a good possibility. And the political environment. I personally, I mean, I like it to a degree, but also, too, I think businesses should be able to do what they need to do to stay alive. And I know I'm picking on the UAW workers here, but I'm going to say it again. You can't help but wonder if part of this has to do with the UAW settlement that they reached.
Well, nobody wants to see this stuff move to China, but I mean, a business is a business for a reason. Businesses aren't in business to give away stuff.
So
they're in business to make money.
I agree with Red Green there, and I think that the other thing to keep in mind is that China.
Red Green?
Yeah, you sound just like Red Green right now. I can't be the only one.
Oh, okay.
But the other thing to keep in mind is in China, you know, the government there kind of has the keys to the patent office. So if you're moving kind of headquarters and stuff around there, it's a lot harder to keep control of your intellectual property for companies headquartered there and everything else. So, I mean, there's a reason why Peugeot didn't move their headquarters there when long time ago as well, right? So, and remember, Stellantis is Peugeot, Fiat, Chrysler, all of them. So, I think that there's probably some expansion with local like EV companies and stuff in China, but I'd have a tough time seeing them move anything there.
Yeah, this is
I could see maybe if they expand their electric market, I could see that maybe moving there. Because it's obvious that they like their electric cars over there a lot more than we like them here.
Yeah, this is Clint.
Go ahead.
That's okay. This is Clinton Houston. Yeah, and I agree with John as well. Plus, also too, the Chinese government also pretty much has an agreement with any company that sets up there that they're automatically a 50% owner. So unless Stellantis wants to give away 50% of its ownership to foreign country, it wouldn't really benefit them at all. Now, if they put a finger hold in there and just go ahead and set up another EV market, just to take advantage of maybe the pass-through of the cheaper lithium, the cheaper batteries, and just, you know, disperse them to an American market, then I could see that.
Right. I mean, that electric car company they just bought in China could set them up nicely to export out a lot of the raw materials and other things that are easier to get in China for the rest of their fleet, right? They could strike up some sort of deal for export benefits by investing a certain amount into the local, you know, Chinese EV market.
And if they set up if they're an American base, an American owned company with a base in China, they would probably skirt around some of the tariffs that they would have to get pay.
Well, if they were selling in Jeeps in China, that would definitely help get them around the tariffs. And of course, the Chinese market is a big market.
But I mean, a Jeep in China is not necessarily their cup of tea. It's like when you have the Japanese cars with a Toyota, an Acura, you know, the higher end the Lexus. There's no Lexus in Japan. It doesn't exist outside the United States.
But they just have Toyota.
Yeah, you gotta remember that Chinese tax too, which is 100%.
But I think rather than China, if you're looking at a place for Jeep, I think India makes more sense just by there's actually a really growing Jeep culture there. I mean, how many of y'all, if you go and follow like Jeep tags on Instagram, you're going to see there's a ton of them coming out of India. So that market right there, I think, would be probably better prime for the Jeep brand.
Compete with Mahindra?
Yeah, Mahindra.
Well, that would be kind of funny, huh?
But isn't
Mahindra? How the turns have tabled.
Aren't the Roxors made in the States, though?
Are they? I have no idea.
I don't know. I'll tell you what. I mean, it's like if you guys ever were on Pirate years ago in the India part, man, there was a guy that would, he's working on a dirt floor and sandals, pounding out Jeep bodies with nothing but a torch and a hammer and a bag, and that was it. And he would make you a complete 100% accurate 1974 CJ5 body. But the Chinese market, no, I don't see it. I really don't see it. They're not the kind of vehicles, unless they're going after the luxury market, which dovetails in with the luxury brand, then maybe. But there's a lot more competitors that are cheaper.
So I'm glad you brought up the idea of pounding out your own Jeep, because I'm kind of wondering if that might be the direction we're ultimately going to have to be going, is that we're not going to get the vehicle that we want, and if we want a Jeep, we may have to build it ourselves. You guys remember the old days, not you, John, but you remember the old days when you could buy a $3,000 PC, or you could build one for, you know, $900. I'd like to see a similar situation where you could build your own vehicle for, you know, a fraction of the cost.
You can do that on Amazon. You can do that on Amazon today, right? Just buy all the parts from China. I mean, hell, half the Jeeps in the malls are probably built in China already, right? So where all the parts coming in. How many parts do you have to buy and made in China and put on your Jeep before you have to say it's made in China?
Exactly. Well, I mean, we buy so many things, like you're saying, replacement parts or even electronics and stuff that we're putting in and on our Jeeps, LEDs, LED headlights that are probably made in China already. So I think that's kind of the realization that you have to have, is that even if the Jeep starts being built in China, is it really that much difference? And of course, that's going to be the big thing, is the quality there. Are you getting the same type of vehicle that you would have got if it was built here?
Just trying to imagine Jeep enthusiasts in China loading their family up, taking the top off, and going out in the Chinese wilderness somewhere and going wheeling. I don't know. Just doesn't seem like that. You know, I don't know a lot about their culture, but that just didn't strike me as being their culture.
It didn't sound like something the Chinese government would like, that independent thought type stuff that Jeep people generally have.
Well, if you compare China to Europe, I know in Europe a Jeep is a huge vehicle, especially in the little towns. And from what I've seen, China doesn't have more room. They have less room in the cities and everything else, so it'd be like trying to drive a Sherman tank down the middle of the neighborhood.
Ooh, a mini Jeep. They're kind of like one of those $300 electric Jeeps that you get for your kids.
But I will say, China has a large rural area, though, right? I mean, yes, most of their population is like in Hong Kong, Beijing, Shanghai, and everything, but they have a huge rural. I mean, the size of China, it's massive. So it probably wouldn't work in the city, but I mean, a Wrangler's kind of tough to work in New York as well, right? I mean, I've driven around there in a Honda Accord before, but I would think there's probably a market for it in the rural areas, because they have existing, you know, 4x4 SUVs today in China.
Mm-hmm. I think the Chinese would love Jeeps there.
I don't think they would work for the majority of the population because of what Larry said.
Well, but we don't buy the vehicles based on our needs. We buy vehicles based on our wants. I mean, this is the reason why you see everybody wants an SUV. They want a large gas-guzzling vehicle, and they don't mind having to pay a little extra to have it because that's what they want.
Most of our industrialized population work in the cities. Because they have their Chinese New Year, everybody leaves the cities and goes back to the farmlands for several weeks, and then they all come back for to go back to work, because most of them work in the cities, not in the farmlands.
All right, so just a reminder, the question is, if Jeep moves to China, the construction of our Jeeps and Ram trucks as well. I know there's some Ram truck lovers out there. Would you still buy your Jeep or your Dodge Ram from China? I think everybody has said no so far, right? Has anybody said yes?
No.
I'm sorry, Clint, what were you saying?
I said if I wanted my check engine light already on when I bought the vehicle.
And what language would it be in?
Exactly. Now, I mean, I don't think so, because especially with its heritage and Jeeps in America, it goes hand in hand. And if it was farmed out, I honestly think that the American market would almost fall to non-existent just because of the heritage that goes along with that.
So there's an argument that the market, I mean, and if you guys have seen it, I don't know if it's the market, if it's EVs, or what's causing the issue. But right now there's a lot of really great sales. I mean, Larry's been worrying over a Gladiator for several weeks now because the prices are so good, because sales are so far down. And I don't know why sales are down. If it's, like I said, if it's the economy, if it's the EV competition, or what exactly that's going on. Anybody have any ideas about that?
Oversaturation market.
Interest rates.
Yeah, interest rates, certainly.
Interest rates are killing you. I mean, you can have a really, really good credit score, and you're looking at like a 6.5%, 7%. Or like
exactly.
That'll put when your payment opportunity, if you're limited to $500 or $600 a month budget or whatever, you know, the price of the vehicle that you can buy just went way down when you're tacking on that much interest. That and insurance premiums are going up all over the place, a lot of areas. And so you factor in the overall higher cost of owning one, and it definitely hits the brakes.
I also look at it as, and no offense, Larry, I don't think the Gladiator is a really good pickup truck.
No, they're not.
And you've got oversaturation in the market with all of them.
And that's the whole issue. That's where I struggle. They don't make a really great truck, and they're really not a Wrangler. They're kind of something in between, right? You don't have the storage behind the seat. And it's, I 100% agree. It's kind of in that gray zone.
Yeah, Colorado Bison or whatever, Buffalo it is, the Tacoma TRD Pro. I mean, you start going into the market that they're competing in. And granted, they're not solid front axle rigs, so you can say maybe they're not direct competitors, but for a small truck, I mean, the novelty of the world, when they first came out, they were like, oh, wow, it's a Jeep truck. That's amazing. And I think that we saw in SEMA with the explosion of stuff for them and aftermarkets, and it went crazy. So
yeah, to make that its best wheeler, you got to put the Bob bed on, and then it totally is not a truck.
Yeah, and for MotoBuild, I think it's like $3,000 for that bed.
Yeah, but that's a wheeling machine there, though. I mean, because you got a little longer wheelbase with the departure angle, what it should be.
So if I understand what a truck is, does anybody buy a mid-sized truck for a truck, a work truck, a move your friend's truck? I mean, I don't see the Gladiator as being a Gladiator owner. I didn't buy it because it was a truck. I mean, partially, but I bought it because it was a Jeep, and you can go off road. I just thought it has good towing capability for a mid-sized truck. So, I think it depends on what you want. And if I was going to get a truck, it'd have to be a full-size truck. And I don't know what I'd get. I mean, normally I would say like a Ford F-150 with a club or crew cab, depending on what they have. I haven't looked at it in forever. But for the prices they were doing for Fords, I was back when I was looking for a tow vehicle, I was looking at Dodge Ram because the price was a lot better. But it's not a truck. And I don't know that it was ever designed to be a truck.
If I would have had one when I needed to go get that axle up there at... You know, that 12-hour drive up there, I for sure would have taken one. It would work perfect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not that they can't do truck-like things. I don't think that's arguable. But, I mean, if you're at the price point, at least that they were, and maybe it's a different conversation now, but if you're at that price point where they were, like you said, that's a half-ton price point at that level. And it's not going to do Jeep things, but for that same amount of money, you could probably go get yourself a hell of an old TJ or YJ to start having fun and tow to the trails kind of thing and be in pretty good shape. So, and as far as mid-size truck owners use them, I mean, You see how many Ford Rangers and Tacomas run around here with that bed completely loaded? Like I definitely see them used a lot. Like I wouldn't say that the midsize trucks aren't used.
No, of course not. Some people will use it, but who are these people? Are they business people, or are they people that need to take they need a truck for their day to day work, or are they just people that are moving apartments as they get kicked out?
An overlanding rig, that's a great overlanding rig.
It really
is. Put your rooftop tent on it, and you got all your storage in the bed.
And it's a Jeep.
Yeah, and it's a Jeep, right? So, but if you're wheeling it on the hard trails, that's different. But if you're using it as an overland rig, that's a great vehicle for that.
You're probably adding a lot of parts made in China back to the original.
China. Yeah, no, I actually like the Gladiators, Tony. I didn't mean to.
Too late. Late. You've already sowed your seed.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I don't see the point of it. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. The next thing you're gonna say, Clint, is you don't like red Jeep.
My Jeep is black. My other two Jeeps are green.
What you're saying is he likes other people's Gladiators. He thinks they're cool to look at and stuff like that.
But yeah, as long as it's not his.
I like Dave's Gladiator, so there's that.
No, Tony
knows who he is.
Ooh, red Jeeps are sexy.
Knew that was coming.
I need to put the black Jeeps are depressing back on here.
Hey, remember though, the hood on my Jeep was red. It came off of a red YJ because I destroyed the black one.
Well, when you need a way of getting out to get a little traction, the hood has to be sacrificed sometimes.
Yeah, I flew up on the last owner. Those YJs and hood springs, not a good thing.
All right. Well, actually, Clint mentioned this about Jeep being a luxury vehicle, which is also scary. So, as I said in the opening, there are signs that Jeep is moving from off-road to luxury vehicles. And I think it is completely away from their off-roading thing. And I'm wondering if and asking you, is Jeep forgetting who they are or just trying to survive? Do you guys think that this is another BS story that people are just floating out there for views or clicks?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, everything's getting more feature rich because I think Clint said a little bit earlier about market saturation. Like off-road rigs are out there, so you're trying to more people getting into the sport. There's not a lot of chucks out there, right? Like, give me a big metal Jeep with no airbag and no seat belts and no roll bar. You know, the people that you're getting into now, they expect a little bit more. They expect Bluetooth. They expect to be able to, you know, play music.
Oh, and they got to be able to sit their phone on a little pad so it charges the phone while you're driving.
Yeah, you don't do that? I do that all the time.
Not in the Gladiator. I had to build something for that.
I've got one of those luxury Jeep vehicles that are
you do,
and I love it. So I don't care where they are in that realm, but they make that kind of stuff. It's that I like compared in the build quality on it compared to the Tahoe, at least that I had before that, night and day. Like I think
Jeeps are built very well. I'm very impressed with the Gladiator. I don't have a lot of miles on it, but it seems to be doing very well. Larry would argue that with me. Did you get your Jeep back, Larry?
No, I got to take it in tomorrow. We had ice here, so I didn't want to take it up there and just leave it sit. So I'm taking it in tomorrow to have all the seals put in it, hopefully for the fourth or fifth, to get the oil leak stopped.
You need one of those YouTube certified mechanic badges and just do it your damn self and just give them the bill.
Yeah. Thing is, it's being done under warranty, so
that's what I'm saying. You have the certificate, little patch. You should be able to do it.
Yeah,
that's why I submit the bill to them, and then they pay you for the warranty work. It all works out.
I don't think it works like that, but
okay. It could. Well, okay. It would have been done a lot quicker, don't you think? And accurately the first time.
Hey, Tony,
I would sure hope so.
Talking about the luxury side of Jeep, I bought a newer 04 Grand Cherokee back, I think it was about 06, and And even I can remember even back then thinking, I mean, because it had full leather package, it had the pedals would move back and forth. Like, so like my wife, when she drove it, she could move the pedals towards her. The steering wheel had lots of controls all over it, even on the back of the steering wheel. I mean, it, they had a lot of luxury items in a Jeep, even seemingly ahead of some of the other luxury vehicles that they were out at the time. So they, I mean, they've been doing luxury type stuff. You know, I know it's progressed a lot since then, but even back then it was pretty, you know, pretty up there.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. But I can see, I can see that. Well, and I think that this is correct. You guys correct me if I'm thinking about this wrong. When you have a luxury vehicle, you have fewer people buying them, but you're getting a higher profit because they're luxury vehicles. Does that sound right to you guys?
Not really, because the tech that goes into that is pretty expensive. I mean, have you guys checked into a dealership lately and gone and sat in a Grand Wagoneer?
I sat in the one in my driveway.
A Grand Wagoneer?
Yeah, I've got a Grand Wagoneer.
The $120,000 Grand Wagoneer.
Yeah, he's John fucking Lee.
John Lee money?
It was the only Wagoneer I could buy. It was the only Wagoneer I could buy that had the 392 in it. So, you know,
that's
what I get. But yeah, they're nice. But I think the problem is the full-size SUV segment is extremely profitable for them overall. And if you don't have that white elephant, if you don't have that standard bear top-of-the-line one, like an Escalade or a Navigator or something like that, then you're not really looked at as playing in there. So I think that you have those brands because they sell a lot of regular Wagoneers, because you're like, oh, that brand's awesome. Then you see that price tag and you're like, yeah, I can go with the regular Wagoneer instead and not have to, you know, pay that premium. But look at what it can be, right? So
yeah.
And not to brag or anything, but oh, you know,
John's already done that.
Have you seen the luxury vehicle behind me there in my picture there?
Does it have air conditioning?
Yes.
That's awesome.
It could be argued that Bill's 392 vehicle is certainly in the luxury price tag range.
Sure.
That's more performance price tag range, I think.
Yeah, but prices just went through the roof in the last couple of years. They're just starting to come back down. Price point doesn't mean luxury anymore.
You look at some of the newer, like, fully loaded, you know, JLU Rubicons, and they're getting close to that price I paid for that 392 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could look at a stripped down diesel truck, right? And you're pushing $70,000 with that. It's definitely not luxury. So, I mean, 392 in a Wrangler, I think there's a performance tax, as you can call it, is driving the price rather than luxury. Because, Bill, yours, I think, still has, like all other ones, breech might work. It's manual seats and everything, right? In the 392.
Yeah.
So it's not like they, you know, put the seat massagers that my wife's car has in the 392 or anything. It's performance based price point, I think.
So,
yeah, and I agree.
So let me ask you this. Would you prefer, if you were going to buy a luxury vehicle, what do you think of when you think, oh, I'm going to buy a luxury vehicle. I got X amount of dollars I can throw away. What luxury vehicle would you buy? What is your ultimate luxury vehicle?
G-Wagon.
I've seen those on the trail. They're actually pretty good, like, from that. But, no, I don't know. Revezza? Just, no, I'm joking.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like, if you look at a G-Wagon, it's still, it's military heritage underneath of it. And it's build quality and it's performance. And I'm not talking like a Brabus or anything like that. I mean, just a regular G-Wagon. Yeah, that would be it.
I think I would go Rolls-Royce Phantom or, you know, Ghost or something like that. I mean, you said luxury car, you know, you've got the money or whatever.
Any vehicle. I mean, it doesn't have to be off-road. Just something that
it's got to have suicide doors with a pop-out umbrella, too. Like
pop-out umbrella. That sounds nice.
I think, you know, all of us are thinking, you know, a Lambo or, you know, something like that. But try to get in and out of one of those. It's not comfortable.
Yeah, that's why I went with the Rolls Royce.
Yeah, the problem isn't as much getting in it. It's getting out of it.
Yeah.
Rolling out onto the pavement. But I think the word luxury really depends on where you're coming from with that, too. right? Because if you're used to driving, I'm going to say older CJs, and you jump into a newer JL with leather and heated seats and everything, it's pretty luxurious.
Hey, I didn't get leather and heated seats in the Gladiator, and going from a 1998 Cherokee, Jeep Cherokee, to a Gladiator was certainly a luxury jump.
Sure.
Hey, there's a reason I make Dutch drive his Gladiator when we go out to eat or do something or take a trip.
Oh, it's nice.
Instead of my TJ.
Yes. Well, you can fit people in it, too. I call my chauffeur. Yeah.
Well, I call my chauffeur and make him come pick me up. They'll take me to breakfast.
Yeah, but I think the luxury items. I mean, I've always been a big proponent of just give me a base model and, you know, a stripped down Rubicon. All the good parts, none of the extra stuff I don't need.
That's not Rubicon is not a basic model.
I want the Sport S. I want the axles. I want the transfer case. I don't need all the other stuff that it comes with.
Well, that's also mine. When I ordered it in 2017, it's a basic Rubicon model, manual transmission, cloth seats. The only options that I got on it was the hard top, and then I swung for the Alpine sound system in it. And other than that, it is standard base Rubicon trim, which in 17 included the LED lights, which was nice. But
yeah, that's nice.
And aren't you wishing you had not got lockers, because you're changing all that shit anyway?
But I didn't have to change it necessarily right away.
No, just so until you broke it.
I was able to do a lot of shit in the last, you know, 7 years because I had that platform to start with.
Yeah, I think that is a good argument. How long do you wait before you get what you want? And if you can get it quickly, and start using it for fun and things you want to do, I think that makes a big difference.
Whenever they up your credit limit on your credit card is usually when you get that. Tax return time usually is another good one.
There's thinking it through, and then there's reality. I got you.
Hey, John, when are you going to move that speaker?
What speaker? Oh, the one that's in the floor?
Yeah, the one you hate.
That is stupid. I can't believe they did that in 17. So, like, all the rest of them, they had the speakers off to the side, like, over the wheel well. But in 17, they're like, I know, let's make everything in the back rattle by putting it in the floor. So, the subwoofer is literally in the middle of the floor in the back.
Oh, and I know you love rattling stuff.
Oh, yeah, you're swapping out axles, you're building it bigger and heavier, and you're just going to leave that speaker rattle all your tools around.
Well, like Tony says, you don't need a big speaker for podcasts, right?
No, not at all. You can take that thing out.
But besides, if you haven't heard the kind of music that I crank up, I wouldn't tell if it was rattling or not.
That's true.
All right. So if Jeep is going to selling luxury vehicles only, and that might mean no more Gladiators or Wranglers, just G-Wagons, just Grand Wagoneers and Wagoneers and Grand Cherokees, is that a Jeep brand that you would like? I'm thinking most people say no, because everybody here is interested in off-road. Well, I mean, you, for example, John, you're not only interested in off-road because you have both luxury Jeep vehicle and an off-road Jeep vehicle.
Yeah, I think there's compromises you can find, but look at Land Rover. Right, they went all in on the luxury, you know, football player market with the Range Rovers and stuff like that. And now they're coming back with the new Defender, and they're trying to market it as that rugged off-roader again, kind of like they have with the D90, kind of going back. I kind of feel like they're going the other direction, but they've already got the luxury. We need to figure out how to bring the off-road back in.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they screwed themselves by doing that? I mean, they lost some market share, I'm sure.
Well, I think they screwed themselves by making a shitty product. I mean, when something is really
breaking
down all the time and everything else, it's got that reputation of just absolute horrible reliability. So I think that probably hurts them, because when you think rugged off-road and everything else, you're not thinking, you know, brand new vehicles taken back up to the dealership because blah, blah, blah. Right? So I think that they're trying to go back, because they don't really have, I mean, that Defender's probably the closest thing they have to like a real off-road vehicle.
Right.
And I don't know if I would even put it up next to a 4Runner. I think a 4Runner would probably be able to outdo it.
How nice was that Defender we seen that day out at Hidden Falls, that Defender pickup truck? That was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was like a D90, but it was a truck or something. Right. That was cool. I've seen a few of them pop up on Marketplace right-hand drive or whatever, and man, they're proud of them. They're all like 90,000, 95,000.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I think I've talked about this before on the show. We're going to talk about EVs again because they're being pushed really, really hard in the marketplace. Of course, there's some things going on now where major companies are backing out of the EV market or cutting back on the EV market. I have heard, and I also too, I've lived through it. Well, let me back up a second. Do you guys remember when calculators first came out, the hand calculators, not anything with paper, the paper rolls or any of that stuff?
The TI-55?
Yeah, the little bitty handheld.
Red LEDs.
Handheld the calculators. Texas, yeah, Texas Instruments. Yep.
Red with the red letters, yep.
Like, and this is going to be 75, I think, and they were like $300 and $400, which was a fortune for something back then.
Oh, yeah.
And then what happened to calculators as time progressed? I mean, it was because everybody wanted one, but also too the miniaturization of circuits, the simplification of all the hardware, and they got cheaper and cheaper. And good Lord, what you can probably buy one for $3 now. Not a TI-55 or anything that's a complicated one, but your basic calculator, which would have been worth a couple of $100, I think, back in 1975. So with I mention this because Tesla is kind of doing this in the car market. When we think of cars and vehicles, we don't think of electric. We don't think of cars as being like a electronic device. We saw the same thing with cell phones. When cell phones first came out, and then smartphones came out, and all these things changed over time. They got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper to where we are now. And really, it's just not the way things normally go for products. They don't normally get significantly cheaper. I think with what Tesla is doing with their vehicle, they're going to make their EVs cheaper and cheaper over time, especially if they improve the battery technology, which is the majority of the price of the vehicle. I believe that's a true statement. So what is going to happen to Jeep, Ford, and GM that are not in the EV market? How do you compete with an electric vehicle that has a lot less maintenance? Is a lot less to purchase. Oh, and you can use it to make money because it has full self-driving and you can let it go out and take people around. I still don't like the idea of having my personal vehicle being a part-time taxi just from the filth people are going to do to it. but I mean, it makes a difference between something you got to pay for and it loses value, that now you have something that you can have and make money off of it.
I don't think that's a linear thought.
Yeah, no, tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, because the material costs in order to get all those materials in order to make the batteries are getting more expensive because they are not a finite resource. So I think the pricing is going to be in lockstep with the economy. That the more it's going to cost to harvest, to ship, to mine, to gather all these natural these resources in order to create the battery packs and stuff like that. I mean, the plastic is the plastic. However, with the war that's going on with oil and gas and the scarcity of it, and the higher cost of petroleum in order to gain and get. To create the pellets in order to make the plastics, in order to the copper prices. I mean, copper's what, $3 a pound, $4 a pound right now, spot price. So, I mean, the raw materials in order to make that up are just going to get more expensive. So I don't think they're going to ever, you're never going to see like a Tesla Model S sitting on a lot for $20,000. It's not going to happen ever.
They're working on 25 will be their next price for their EV.
And that's the thing. I mean, he said that 10 years ago that, oh yeah, we're going to, the Model S is going to be $30,000, and it never was. You could never get one. So, I mean, it'd be really interesting to see because all I've heard is, with Tesla, the build quality is horrible. The fit and finish is horrible. If you're lucky enough to get a Tesla with an unlimited warranty, then sure, you're fine. But when that battery pack goes out, it's $20,000, $15,000 to replace it.
Yeah, battery packs.
I think the only way they get to that cheaper model to put out is they've got to stop trying to build a car that's going to check all these boxes for all these edge case items that pull up. Well, I won't buy one because it won't get 600 miles of range and recharge in 10 minutes, right? Because I think the problem is when you're making that compromise, you're almost trying to boil the ocean in that moment. If they focus on a vehicle that's like a urban city commuter car, and that's the one that's going to get down to that cheaper price point and make people go for it. So yeah. If you live in a Chicago, well, maybe not Chicago with cold weather, but if you live in like LA or LA, Austin, Dallas, Atlanta, if you live in like big metro areas, especially in the South, then you know, a cheaper one that's got maybe 200 miles of range because you're just using it for daily work commuting or something like that, and you can charge it home or whatever, you know, that to me is where you get into that price point. I don't think you get into that price point trying to make a car that's going to check even 80% of what a combustion engine car that we think of today is going to check. So, you know, not something as small like a smart car. I'm still saying like a normal size car, but
right. The
feature set needs to be more geared towards a daily commuter in an urban area with a, you know, sub 50 mile a day commute or something, right?
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that's really where its place is more in the higher congested areas. And then also, you know, keep in mind too, is it doesn't just sell the United States. I mean, these things are everywhere all over the world. So, I mean, you go to a more congested European market, you'll sell a ton of them. They sell more Teslas overseas than they do in the States.
Which is amazing when you see how many of them are driving around here in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing more of them all the time. I mean, I have no problem with you guys being correcting me on any of this stuff. But I will say, mark my words, that within probably 2 years, maybe sooner, you're going to see a much less expensive EV from Tesla, and I think it's going to cripple the big automobile manufacturers because they're not going to be able to compete with the internal combustion engine vehicles, and they are not moving forward with EVs of their own. We were talking about Stellantis investing in a Chinese EV company, so maybe they are trying to do something like that. I think we're going to see Tesla take over the automotive world.
Well, it goes in hand. Like, I was talking to a buddy of mine at work, and his daughter and my daughter are like 2 weeks in age. So his daughter's about to turn 17. My just turned 17. And he's looking really hard for her. And he's like, I want to buy her a new car because I want her to have all the new modern features and that all these new cars have. He goes, but the cheapest brand new internal combustion engine car that's available right now is like $33,000. It's the cheapest thing you can do. So
I mean, a Hyundai or a Kia for
like a Kia. So
you can get a Kia Soul for $24,000.
Yeah, you can get a Corolla in the $20,000s. We were just looking at the new Toyotas because I'm going to buy a new Camry, and my buddy was looking at a new Corolla. You can get a Corolla in the upper $20,000s, a decent one.
But I mean, and I think it goes hand in hand. I mean, if he's able to make a $25,000 EV, then you're going to break into that market.
Oh, it's going to be huge.
That's underserved.
I mean, I will say though, look how they were on delivering the promises of the Cybertruck. I've seen them in person. That thing is a fucking just god awful.
I haven't seen one yet.
It looks like I posted a video in Discord where I was driving beside one the other day, and that thing is just a hunk of junk when it looks like. I mean, it's the panel gaps in the side are just outrageous, and there's a video of one out at Hidden Falls. Somebody took one out there. And, you know, just trying to get up the Wildcat, and they were airing them down to 30 PSI because, like, standard is like 50 PSI, and the tires are real specialty. And just, I don't know, they screwed up a pickup truck pretty bad with the Cybertruck. So I don't know about delivering on a $25,000 car.
So what you're saying is check your favorite YouTuber next year when they start building, like, swapping gas motors in these Cybertrucks?
I don't even know if you could. That stainless steel. I mean, I guess with the welder, Larry could probably build one for us.
And swap Cybertruck.
I'm just waiting for Whistling Diesel to destroy one.
That's right.
Rick from Arkansas. When they have an EV that will compete with the practicality, because I've got two vehicles. You know, I've got the one that I use to commute to work, 62 miles one way to work. When they come out with an EV that will compete with the practicality of my Honda Accord as far as expense wise and all yada yada yada, then I would be in the market for one. But I'm still going to have my Jeep, which is my off-road vehicle, to do everything I want to do that's Jeep wise. You know, I don't you know, for me it wouldn't be a competition because I've got, you know, I'm looking at two different worlds.
Didn't the VW Rabbit come out with something back in the 80s that did 42 miles of the gallon?
Well, the Honda CRX, that little hatchback two-door thing or whatever, that little five-speed, that sucker would get 40 to 50 miles a gallon. Like, and would do a mean-ass donut, too, on a back.
Well, my Jetta diesel gets 42.
Yeah, if they did something years ago, why haven't we progressed with the gasoline or diesel like technology to get 50 or
50 miles? We have, but the problem is as we've tried to get better the fuel efficiency on it because of all the air cleaner, like EPA based stuff that they're having to overcome to get that, you're fighting against an object moving. So with those cars we had back in the day, they didn't have to pass a smog test, right? Well, they didn't have to pass any of that stuff.
Right.
And also, John, all those luxuries add weight.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're pushing a much lighter vehicle down the road back then. You could get away with a 1.8 liter, you know, diesel engine back then.
You say that, but at the same time, like, my Jetta wagon's a diesel. It's got leather, heated seats, you know, nice stereo, all that stuff. Like, sunroof, it was hard-loaded.
Yeah, but that's...
It only weighs, like, 3,600 pounds.
Yeah, but I would weigh that because, you know, Volkswagen, you know, they're famous for telling the truth on all of their measurements.
Dieselgate.
Well, as long as they're not being under a test or something with something connected to the OBD2, yeah. I looked up the Model Y, the Tesla Model Y. It is $32,890 for their basic model.
And nobody gets the base.
Nah, probably not. I mean, but that's 260 mile range, 135 mile per hour, 6.60 to 60. So it's comparable to a nice vehicle back in the '70s as far as the 0 to 60. I think my 327 got me there in 6.7. Of course, I was running the stopwatch on my wrist while I was also performing the stunt off road close course. but right now, I mean, $32,000. So that is not that's less than $10,000 away from the $25,000.
Well, then you add if you add the government incentive on top of that, whenever they do that,
yeah,
then it actually makes it even cheaper.
Oh yeah, I mean, you get $7,500 off. But I think Matt did confirm this, that $7,500 off isn't like a $7,500 check from the tax man. It's if you have sufficient tax requirements that exceed $7,500, you'll get that up to the $7,500 taken off your taxes, what you owe them.
So it's interesting that you add. So a couple months ago, I had the pleasure of working on a 57 Bel Air, right? And everybody always looks at the 1957. You know, the cars, they're big, they're heavy. I think weighed 3,200 pounds, guys.
I know. My Jeep's, it's like 6,000 pounds.
Exactly.
When you think of the old iron, the old steel, big, heavy boat going down the road. And
not that heavy. I have a 3,500-pound winch on my trailer, and it pulled that thing up completely dead with two flat tires. It don't weigh that much.
Well, let's not forget that the Charge America was started. It was born out of a penalty from Dieselgate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was a buddy of mine had a Gulf diesel, and about every 20,000 miles you have to clean the EGR out of it.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think that's an awesome commuter car. Those diesel Jettas and Gulfs were getting crazy mileage, and they were, you know, very efficient. They still had plenty of power to commute with, right? They weren't hot rods, but they were still great to commute with.
This is some of the dumbass stuff that we do over and over again. Back in the 70s, when the movies came out making everybody afraid of nuclear energy, ultimately that's the biggest green energy thing that you can have is a nuclear reactor. And then all this stuff with that's going on. I mean, there's a number of things that people have just shot themselves in the foot. The diesel engines, they love them in Europe. I think we'd love them here. And if you can have a VW that gets you 50 miles to the gallon on diesel, screw it if it costs more than gasoline. It's worth it.
Yeah, the problem with the diesel ones, though, is that they're very difficult to meet the EPA rules.
Get rid of the EPA. What good has it done in China?
NRA, DHS. I mean, you know,
you say that, John, but like mine's a 2012. It doesn't have any of the stuff that you think of when you think diesel. There's no DEF. There's no DPF. That all comes in after a certain weight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, and I'm not, but it's still, they're not the cleanest. My point was in what's marketing is making people think, right? When people think of diesels, they think of dirty, you know,
rolling that coal.
They think of my dually and not my Volkswagen. I agree.
And I would also say that I don't know if it was the movies in the 70s that made people afraid of nuclear energy. I think it was the newsreels in 1945 that probably.
I think that helped, but I think that the China syndrome with Jack Lemmon, I think that movie scared the hell out of people. And that's the reason why we don't have as much nuclear energy now as what, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, a nuclear power plant or two would have been a lot better a few years ago when we had 36 hours of power outage than windmills and good feelings that everybody was putting up to generate energy.
So when are we going to see the full electric Jeep Wrangler come out?
In the next year or two. I think it's inevitable. I don't think it's going to be an exclusive offering. Like, they're going to get rid of all the gas engine ones. I'm not saying ICE. They're not going to get rid of all
ICE,
all
baby.
Gas engine Jeeps, but kind of like the 4xE, I think it'll be a model. It'll be an option. Which, so, I mean, we should be happy, right? Look at all these options we've got with Jeep now. When you had the JK, your option was 2-door or 4-door outside of trim levels, right? You didn't get any different engine choices. I guess you get a manual or an automatic. I think that was another option.
I like what Jeep is doing with their EVs. I'm not going to buy one, but I like what they're doing. I don't know if you guys heard a recent flagship episode. We were talking about the Wagoneer S that's coming out this year. It's a 2024 Wagoneer S that has a 400-mile range. It's 100% EV. And dual motor, so it's all-wheel drive, dual motor, and I say 400 miles. They don't say specifically. They say, they didn't say maybe, but that's what I read into it. It was like maybe 400-mile range, which is really nice. I mean, that's starting to get to the area where I like the range. I don't have range anxiety as much for that type of range.
I want to know the weight on that to have a full-size electric SUV that'll still get 400 miles.
Did you see, I think, what's his name, Grey Wolf Overland or whatever it was on Discord? Once he said it, I can't unsee it. When you look at the picture, it looks like the redone Chevy Blazer. Like that horrible crossover looking, like it looks horrible. Not as bad as a Cybertruck. But
you talking about
still,
the Wagoneer S?
Yeah, the Wagoneer S. Like the picture, if you look on Discord, when he said that, how it looks like the Chevy Blazer or whatever, like I can't.
I don't know why they have to put LEDs in the grill. I mean, you know, it just seems, I mean, it's just a marketing thing. They would look at those blue LEDs in the grill.
Some people have LED fetishes.
Or bright lights.
Because it makes it fancy.
LGBTQ lights.
You guys are always picking on Chuck and his unnatural love of LED lights.
He's just just listen to the coach. Shut up.
Oh, that's great stuff. As I always like to say, the show continues on even after the recording stops, and sometimes it goes on for hours. Hey, coming up on our next Jeep Talk Show interview episode, that's every Friday, Nupesh of Body Armor 4x4, bodyarmor4x4.com. Go check it out. We've got Body Armor 4x4 tube doors for my wife's 2003 TJ. They're very nice, very nice, very well made. And that brings us to the end of another exhilarating Jeep Talk Show Roundtable episode. I want to thank and express my deepest gratitude to our incredible panel of Jeep enthusiasts for sharing their valuable insights, experiences, and expertise with us today. Your passion for Jeeps is truly inspiring, and we're grateful for your contributions. Check out our YouTube channel. We're publishing something new every day. I also want to extend a heartfelt thank you to our listeners who joined us on this adventure. Your support is what keeps us motivated to bring you the best G content out there. And that not only G content, but also Jeep content. Until next time, keep those Jeeps running strong. Hit those trails with confidence. And remember, it's not just a vehicle. It's a way of life. This has been Tony hosting the Jeep Talk Show Roundtable episode, and we'll catch you on the next ride.
Broadcasting since 2010.